Let's continue in our talks from Genesis by looking at Genesis 36. In this chapter, we have the record of Esau's descendants and the early history of the kingdom of Edom, which Esau established. Now, we're not going to read all of this chapter because of the many names involved, but we'll read selected verses and summarize the rest. We'll give the background notes as we read and summarize. So let's read the first 8 verses. The genealogy in these first 8 verses gives Esau's wives and the children born to Esau before he migrated to Mount Seir to establish the kingdom of Edom. Genesis 36, beginning at verse 1. Now this is the genealogy of Esau, who is Edom. Esau took his wives from the daughters of Canaan, Adah, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, Aholibamah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon the Hivite, and Basemath, Ishmael's daughter, sister of Nebaioth. Now Adah bore Eliphaz to Esau, and Basemath bore Reuel. And Aholibamah bore Jeush, Jaalam, and Korah. These were the sons of Esau who were born to him in the land of Canaan. Then Esau took his wives, his sons, his daughters, and all the persons of his household, his cattle, and all his animals, and all his goods which he had gained in the land of Canaan, and went to a country away from the presence of his brother Jacob. For their possessions were too great for them to dwell together, and the land where they were strangers could not support them because of their livestock. So Esau dwelt in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. So we see from this first section of Genesis 36 that Esau had 3 wives and 5 sons. Now we've already read about Esau's 3 wives back in Genesis 26 and Genesis 28. Let's read Genesis 26, verse 34. When Esau was 40 years old, he took as wives Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. And then in Genesis 28 and verse 9, we read, so Esau went to Ishmael and took Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth, to be his wife in addition to the wives he had. Now you'll notice that there is some variation in the names when we compare them, so that some commentaries favor the idea that Esau had more than 3 wives. But most likely the answer is that the wives went by more than one name, especially since these were cross-cultural marriages. Verses 7 and 8 here in Genesis 36 tell us of the separation between Jacob and Esau. For their possessions were too great for them to dwell together, and the land where they were strangers could not support them because of their livestock. So Esau dwelt in Mount Seir. This reminds us of the separation between Abraham and Lot, doesn't it? Now remember that this separation is after Jacob has come back from his 20 years in the area of Haran and 10 years in the area of Shechem. Mount Seir here, where Esau migrated and founded the nation of Edom, was southeast of the Dead Sea. Esau had already taken over Mount Seir, even before this time, because we read back in Genesis 33 that when Esau met Jacob returning home, Esau was coming from Mount Seir with 400 men. But now when Jacob is back home, it seems that Esau moves his family and all his possessions permanently over to the Mount Seir area. Maybe it was at the time of Isaac's death. We can't be sure. In any event, Esau grows so powerful in this new area that his name becomes synonymous with Edom. Verse 8, once again. So Esau dwelt in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. And verse 19. These were the sons of Esau, who is Edom. Edom and Esau are inseparably linked in this chapter. Edom means red, and not only refers to the reddish rocks of Mount Seir, but goes back to the red lentil stew for which Esau sold his birthright. I'm reading Genesis 25 and verse 30. And Esau said to Jacob, please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary. Therefore, his name was called Edom. Now, the next section of Genesis 36, verses 9 through 14, focuses on the descendants of Esau born to him after he migrated to Mount Seir, as we read in verse 9. And this is the genealogy of Esau, the father of the Edomites in Mount Seir. We see here that in all, Esau had 5 sons and 10 grandsons and a number of daughters and granddaughters. In verse 12, we read that one of Esau's grandsons was Amalek. He was the father of the Amalekites. Remember, the Amalekites became a thorn in Israel's side from the days of their wilderness wanderings right on into the time of the kings in Israel. In verses 15 through 19 of Genesis 36, we have a list of the descendants of Esau who became chiefs in Edom. Verse 15, these were the chiefs of the sons of Edom. And then you have the listing, and then we come down to the end of this section, verse 19. These were the sons of Esau, who is Edom, and these were their chiefs. This list of chiefs shows the transition from just families to a tribal structure in Edom, similar to the period of the judges in Israel, only much earlier. Now, in verses 20 through 30 of Genesis 36, we have a listing of the descendants of Seir the Horhite. Verse 20, these were the sons of Seir the Horhite who inhabited the land. And then we have the listing, and then we come down to the end of this section, verse 29, these were the chiefs of the Horhites. The Horhites, or Hivites, as they're also called, were the original inhabitants of the land of Edom. But when Esau took over this area, he subjugated these people to himself. In Deuteronomy chapter 2 and verse 12, we read, the Horhites formerly dwelt in Seir, but the descendants of Esau dispossessed them and destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their place, just as Israel did to the land of their possession, which the Lord gave them. And then also Deuteronomy 2 and verse 22. Again, we read that just as God had done for the descendants of Esau who dwelt in Seir when he destroyed the Horhites from before them, they dispossessed them and dwelt in their place even to this day. So the prophecy made by Isaac about Esau back in Genesis 27 was being fulfilled. By your sword you shall live, Genesis 27 verse 40. So Esau emerged as a powerful overlord in this area. And it looks like there was some intermarriage between the Horhites and the descendants of Esau. In fact, from this section, verses 20 through 30, we see that one of Esau's wives was a descendant of Seir the Horhite. Now in verses 31 through 39 of Genesis 36, we have the names of some of the early kings of Edom. These all reigned before there was any king in Israel. Look at verse 31. Now these were the kings who reigned in the land of Edom before any king reigned over the children of Israel. And there doesn't seem to be any dynasties here, just the most powerful ruler taking over when the former king died. Again, this emphasizes Isaac's prophecy about Esau in Genesis 27:40. By your sword you shall live. In the final section of the chapter, verses 40 through 43, we have another listing of the chiefs of Esau. But this list is different from the listing in verses 15 through 19. The listing here seems to refer to family districts or dukedoms, as we read in verse 40. And these were the names of the chiefs of Esau according to their families and their places by their names. Well, so much for background notes. Now let's move to doctrinal points from this chapter in Genesis. Now, what possible teaching or doctrine can we glean from this chapter? Well, doctrinal point number one, time is the true test of spiritual blessing. Time is the true test of spiritual blessing. Look at the first verse of Genesis 37. Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger in the land of Canaan. What we read of Jacob here is definitely in contrast to what we read of Esau in chapter 36. From all outward appearances at this point, it looked like Esau was being blessed more than Jacob. He had emerged as a powerful overlord with lots of people subject to him. Already he had become the nation of Edom, well on its way to having kings, long before Israel. Meanwhile, Jacob was still a stranger in the land of Canaan. Now it's true, he was blessed with flocks and herds, but he certainly didn't have the power and a kingdom like Esau had. Up until the time of David and Solomon, Edom, the older brother, was more developed than Israel, the younger brother. But time is the true test of spiritual blessing. When David conquered Edom, the full force of the prophecy in Genesis 25 was seen. The older shall serve the younger. Genesis 25, verse 23. And where is Edom today? Edom is no more. How history changes things. Read the book of Obadiah. The predictions of Edom's downfall there because of her pride have come true. And the prophet Ezekiel wrote, I will make Mount Seir a desolate waste and cut off from it all who come and go. I will make you desolate forever. Your towns will not be inhabited. Ezekiel 35, verses 7 and 9. Edom is no more. But look at Israel. They are once again in the land of promise as a nation, a powerful nation. And it's just a matter of time before a spiritual revival comes to the sons of Jacob. Read Romans 11 in this connection. Time is the true test of spiritual blessing. Doctrinal point number two. Time is the true test of spiritual character. Time is the true test of spiritual character. We've seen in our studies in Genesis that Esau was not a spiritual person. Right from the start in Genesis 25, we see that he despised his birthright, and the birthright included spiritual privileges and responsibilities. And Esau never changed throughout his life. Even though he nobly left the land of Canaan to Jacob, Esau never turned to the Lord. Hebrews 12, verses 16 and 17 says this about Esau. He was a fornicator and profane person, and he found no place for repentance. On the other hand, we've seen that Jacob emerged as a man of spiritual character. Even though Jacob had to learn the hard way and had to go through the school of God for many years because of his selfish and deceitful and crafty ways, still there was in Jacob a desire for the things of God. And Jacob slowly but surely matured as a believer. I love the picture that we get of Jacob in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 21. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshiped, leaning on the top of his staff. Jacob did graduate from the school of God. His last years were spent in worship. Time is the true test of spiritual character. What about practical application? Don't feel bad if it looks like you've been left behind. Don't feel bad if it looks like you've been left behind. How do you think Jacob felt when on the one hand he had the promises from God himself that he would be blessed, but then he sees powerful Esau with a kingdom? Jacob had been blessed with a lot of flocks and herds, but he's still a shepherd and a stranger in the land. But Esau had a kingdom. That must have been a little hard to take. It looks like he had been left behind. But God had his reasons. And God has his reasons today. Spiritual blessing demands patient faith. Waiting on God while others prosper is a test of faith and perseverance. Don't feel bad if it looks like you've been left behind. Maybe you're in that situation right now. People you grew up with or went to school with are way ahead of you when it comes to career and material prosperity, etc., etc. Listen, if you're walking with the Lord, you don't have to feel bad if it looks like you've been left behind. The story's not over yet. It's spiritual blessings that count in the end. You know, this is a good application for me. Most of you know I changed careers from science and engineering to the ministry full-time. You know, sometimes when I hear about the success and material prosperity of my former colleagues, I have to remind myself of this lesson. We all do. Don't feel bad if it looks like you've been left behind.